you know, it's a sometimes a David and Goliath situation, and this was also my concern, because on this occasion, actually, TechCrunch has a wider footprint in the community, the tech community, and its news stories are picked up by the likes of Yahoo and Google. And so it had a much bigger reach than the journalists within Jamaica. I can't imagine that anyone at the Gleaner or the Observer could actually even counter it. I can't imagine that the government had a channel that would counter it either. Now, I'm not saying that's what should happen, but what I'm saying is, in other countries, we're not seeing this percolating to these high levels that this story came up to. And that's what really concerned me.
Right.
It's again, it's around ethics and fairness.
You're listening to the Digital Jamaica Podcast, a show created to inform, inspire, and motivate more Jamaicans to explore the world of tech. I'm your host, Katie Francis, and on today's show, we're still talking about Jam COVID, right? But hear me out. This time, we're looking at how the story was reported and asking the question, was TechCrunch biased? And there's a reason why we're asking that. Because at first the reporting was standard. Yeah, I mean, you know, some vulnerability was discovered. The reporter informs the agency or agencies and they run the story. I mean, that's what reporters do, right? We expect them to run the story. But it seems as if, or it would seem to a lot of people, that the editor, Zach Whitaker, took personal interest in this story, so much so that he started doing his own reporting on his private Twitter page. I mean, for almost 2 weeks, this is all he spoke about in great details. And that has some people wondering, what was the motivation behind this in the first place? Now, one of those persons, data privacy, tech, and intellectual property attorney Samantha Sims, openly questioned Zach. She went on his page and was like, yo, brother, what's going on with you, right? Because why was it that this system, the Jamaican system, was the one that was compromised? And why are you so aggressive in your reporting of this story? Now, when Samantha started questioning, I stopped and I started to listen, because, you know, at first she wasn't the first one to question motives. And I was one of those on there going, oh, it's because you people are not used to this level of accountability. But was it accountability, though? See, that's the sticking point for me now, after having this conversation with Samantha. Now, Samantha is somebody we should listen to because this is what she does for a living. She's a Jamaican one. She's a Jamaican living in Britain. And she's one of those attorneys that gets called in when a company experiences a breach. She's the one who has to manage the fallout of that. What are the legal implications? The social implications? How do we respond to this press report? She's in the middle of all that melee. She calls it the war room, right? So she knows a thing or two. She's been doing this for 20 years. So she knows a thing or two about how these situations and scenarios usually play out. And for her, this is highly unusual. And she's concerned about it. And her concerns have made me rethink whether I was too quick to dismiss people's suspicions, right? Whether I should scrutinize this a little bit more, because, you know, I was with everybody. I was like, the story needs to be told. It's a teaching lesson. Jamaicans need to understand what this thing is about and how this works, etc., etc. And then nobody, nobody I've spoken to thinks the government handled this particularly well. So we're not even saying that they're blameless or that they were great in how they handled this. No, it was just bad. But was it terrible? Given the fact that they were hit with one story and then two and then three stories. And then there's this Twitter page that just keeps going on and on and on and on. I was like, did they even have enough time to respond appropriately? And did the posture that they take, was that appropriate given that there may have been something else going on with this reporting that we have not yet, you know, looked at? So it's not as if Jamaica hasn't been at the brunt of, you know, vicious reporting by foreign press. You know what I mean? So I think this is a story that needs ventilating. You know, in retrospect, I'm thinking that we might have been too quick to side with TechCrunch. You know, let's hear what Samantha Sims, again, who's an expert in this space, let's hear what she has to say about it.
My name is Samantha Sims. I am a digital compliance consultant and I am a data privacy attorney. I actually have a consultancy called The Information Collective that operates globally, but in particular, we focus on helping data-driven clients in the UK, in the US, and in the Caribbean to manage their digital compliance needs.
You're right.
On top of that, I have a law firm in New York. I'm the managing attorney of that law firm. It's called Noir Digital Network. Sorry, Noir Digital Law. And the whole purpose of that law firm is to support tech and content creators with the digital and more specifically privacy law requirements and help them to manage those requirements, basically.
Yeah.
So that's what I do. Mm-hmm. My background, I've been in privacy, as I said, for near on 20 years. Since 2005, I have run data privacy programs for the government, for professional services firms. Mm-hmm. I was in-house at a large law firm, and also I supported or ran the privacy program in a travel and also a technology company.
Right.
I am a thought leader in the travel space around data privacy. I help organizations in the travel space to bring about privacy enhancing ways of using travel tech.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize, but actually the travel industry is underpinned by technology. That's what it is.
Yeah.
The majority of it is all technology. Mm-hmm. So when I saw this issue, I stood on the sidelines for a little while. And then when I saw things going the way they were going, I had to say, hey, what's happening here? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to be honest with you, Kadia. Mm-hmm. When the story first came out, mm-hmm. for me, as countries are building their data privacy compliance regimes,
yeah,
will always have big breaches. For someone like me, the breach is what gets everyone to understand what I've been talking about for years, right? I've been saying, yes, you need to do this. Yes, you need to do this. And I said, what's your thought about? But really, for me, when I saw it, I was like, good. Finally, we've got the incident that has the attention. But those of us who work in the field, and I'm sure the techies also felt the same way, finally now people will start to listen.
But then on the 25th of February, and I kind of want to set the context here, so Zach, again, who is the editor, the tech editor for TechCrunch, he put out a tweet that says, this evening we informed Amber Group of a third Jam COVID security lapse involving more than 500,000 exposed quarantine orders for travelers to Jamaica. It appears that Jam COVID website is currently under maintenance. You responded to that tweet, and that was a tweet I saw, and your response was, this is starting to look like a directed attempt to expose organizations rather than highlight security flaws. The reality is security incidents will happen, especially if someone is making a concerted effort to penetrate, compromise the system. So that was your response. And then Grace Lindo, who is, I think she's also a tech attorney. I'll just leave it at that because I'm unsure as to what exactly her title is. She jumped in the next day to say, I am starting to agree, but the response of the GOJ has undeniably exacerbated things, which is the basic consensus on the ground. Oh my God, they are not responding very well. And then other people who are in the tech space locally who before were not saying this, but I guess you saying that kind of gave them permission or made them feel more comfortable with going, well, actually, you know, I agree with you. But then you had a little bit of kickback, right?
Oh, a little bit?
Well, you had some kickback because persons were chiming in to say, every flaw Zach Whitaker and co have exposed as a result of sloppy programming and absolute rookie server configuration. This is not a sophisticated attack. Amber Group is simply sloppy. And of course, persons agree. And then somebody said, good, we have accepted mediocrity for far too long. And then you jump back in to respond to somebody who said, it doesn't seem like it's taking much effort. Plus, exposing flaws is what journalists do in an effort to make things better. And you said, we do not know what penetration they're using to compromise the system. I find it strange that of all the COVID data hosting systems in the COVID world, of all the COVID data hosting systems in the world right now, a system in Jamaica just happens to be the one penetrated and reporting on something doesn't look right. And you went on because, again, people kept coming at you and you're like, I am well aware of the sensitivity of the data. I live and breathe data breaches, have worked on some very high profile data breaches. I can assure you it's not if it will happen, it is when. It is hard to withstand a targeted attack such as this appears to be. And I mean, it went on and on and on. And you were responding to people because your thing is, I am not saying that Amber Group isn't sloppy because you, in fact, you said it. I would expect better from the supplier and I would expect even better from the government in managing vendor security. But the point still stands of all the systems in the world hosting COVID data, why was this one compromised and reported on? So that was a little bit of the exchange under that post from Zach Whitaker between you and mostly Jamaicans and mostly Jamaicans that I would have, I identify as being in the tech space, right? So you have some agreement, you have, but most of people going, nah. And I would add, I would confess in the article that I posted for the podcast on the Digital Jamaica blog, I did say that you have people in Jamaica or Jamaicans who are now starting to question the motives of TechCrunch. Is it that we are not used to accountability and that is what is causing this? Or is it really a matter of journalistic integrity? But since talking to you, you would have cleared up some things for me and that's why I wanted to bring this conversation in this space. So talk to me about, when did you start suspecting that something has gone a little bit left here and it's no longer about, good, now we're having a conversation that we should be having, can't hear, you must feel, let them suffer this one through, it is what it is, it happens. When did it move from that to, okay, no?
Okay, so in these circumstances, and I've been in these circumstances on a number of occasions, I've received a call from the FBI to tell me that the systems have been compromised. You jump on the phone, you get told, you know, you have to comply with what they tell you to do. I've been involved in situations where ethical hackers, the hacktivists, they've compromised the system. And when I say compromise, I don't mean in the techie sense. So let me level set something. I am not a tech expert. Mm-hmm. What I am is a tech lawyer.
Right.
I've been for a long time. But if you were to ask me how to code, how to fix, how to do anything, that I would not be able to do. But I do know the basics, and I do know what to look for and what good looks like and what sloppy looks like.
Right.
Now, as I was saying, I've been in situations where all of a sudden the hacktivists tell you they've been able to access the data. They've been able to compromise somehow through some kind of access. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they had intrusively done it, but they, through their skill sets, have been able to identify maybe where a public server such as this has been left unprotected.
Yeah.
Taking that data, and they have thrown it all over the web just to expose a company. So I've been involved in that. I've been involved where a journalist may call you and say, we're aware that the systems are flawed and, you know, we're going to run a story. Mm-hmm. But what I have never experienced, and so this is why I wanted to have this conversation, to give more of a global helicopter and contextualized view. Mm-hmm. What I have never experienced in my years of practice is a news company going after a particular company or country 3 times in 1 week. Whilst if anyone has been involved in a data breach, I tell everyone, I have the bags under my eyes. I have the it's like scars. It's like mental scars when you're dealing with this. Mm-hmm. We go into what we call a war room. We put a telephone line open. We make a telephone line open. And we continue to be present on that line as we identify the issue, mitigate the issue, the incident that we're faced with. We need to bring in the PR team. We need to look at what the legal ramifications are. We need to look at what the data privacy requirements are. Do we need to give a notice to any of the authorities or any of the individuals? We're also trying to bring in the forensics team to help us to identify what's really, really gone on so that we can have a good story to tell.
Yeah.
That is not easy, even for a very small incident. That is not easy. So when you're talking about an incident of this scale, which is not huge, to be honest, it's big for Jamaica, but it is not huge in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
But talking about something of this scale, 3 times, whilst you are still trying to fix the issue, you're still being told, and you got this wrong, and you got that wrong, and you got the other wrong. I have to start to question the ethics and the motivations. Because when we look at data ethics or just ethics in general, we are focused on doing what is right by the individuals. Mm-hmm. What is the ramifications of this? When we make security flaws public, there are bad actors who will act upon it.
Yeah.
In fact, some of the breaches I have dealt with are actually the result of bad actors having had access to information from a previous security flaw that's been made public, or some data breach has been sold on the dark web, where the data has been sold on the dark web. You know, this is really how a lot of the data security incidents take place. This is what really precipitates some of these issues. So now when I hear that, let's call it around 1 million, to be fair, right? When I hear that around 1 million records have been compromised, that you have passwords to systems being made available, we have immigration information, we have COVID data, which is sensitive personal information because it relates to healthcare. We're naturally going to have other identifiers, contact details, and then in terms of that app, remember, this was an app that was tracking individuals. So when we had the videos made available, we're going to have some kind of geolocation information there, as well as, you know, what the people are doing at the time. Now, when I see that type of information is made available, I know that there are some very nefarious bad actors, including sovereign states, who will try to act upon that. Oh. Here is what I expect will start to happen. We will see breach after breach after breach after breach within Jamaica. We will see Jamaican systems being targeted, right, because they are now seen as being a weak link because this has been highlighted so much. But back to that fairness. So yes, you make a public disclosure in the first place as a journalist. In the first place, what did TechCrunch do? They notified the Amber Group and they notified the government, right, that this had taken place. Mm-hmm. But just because you don't get the response you want, it doesn't mean that you can just jump up and now you're going to publish everything. I mean, fine, publish if you want to. But then within a week, you publish another two instances of incidents having taken place. And okay, they're well aware of it, but you've done some kind of sweep. You're consistently sweeping their systems, or you're doing something to get that information. Mm-hmm. Who that person is, I don't know. The other thing when it comes to these situations where journalists have gone out to, where journalists first report the story, mm-hmm, is that we've only got their word to go by as to how they came upon the information.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, was there a whistleblower? Was there a disgruntled employee who didn't like how the procurement went? Who knows? Was there some third party truly doing the sweeps of all the COVID applications in the world? Who knows? We don't know. We just know what they tell us. But beyond everything, for me, if we are acting ethically, we're not thinking about the here and now only. Mm-hmm. We're thinking about the future impact.
Yeah.
And it's a future impact upon those persons whose data has been compromised, mm-hmm, and also those persons whose data resides in systems more widely within Jamaica.
So are you saying then that because it's not the first time TechCrunch should have done this. In fact, several news sources, they do this. They expose these things or they report on vulnerabilities and whatever. And in that conversation with Trevor would have explained why TechCrunch should have then informed the government, informed Amber that this is what is happening. And you both agree that this is normal. They usually inform the different parties that this is going to happen. And they run their story because it's a news source. That's what they do. They run stories, right? But what your thing is, the back-to-back-to-back story, and then the doggedness of Zach Whitaker on his Twitter his timeline for a while was almost exclusively about Jamaica and Jam COVID, and he was just dashing out receipts. It was screenshots of emails, and it was almost relentless. And I am going to be very upfront and honest. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing because, as you said earlier, it's almost as if you need to put your hand in the fire to feel that it's hot, right? So it's almost as like a baptism by fire. We kind of had to go through this situation for us to realize that, or for us to start taking this thing very seriously, because we kind of dragged our feet around the whole data privacy thing for a while. We kind of dragged our feet. And that's something I want to talk to you about as well. I'm not sure if, to be quite honest with you, the GOJ fully understands the depth of this thing. I'm not sure we have a good handle or grasp on what this thing actually is and what it means and why it is such a prolific problem. Because as I said in the podcast, it's not just Jamaica who can't afford a breach. Nobody can afford a breach because
it just mounts in terms of expenses. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And next thing you know, you have hundreds of billions of dollars worth of damage. And it is hard to contain. So we're not unique in that respect. And at first, I was thinking, okay, well, they're not picking on Jamaica. This happens. But then I saw your post and I'm going, okay, so maybe I'm not scrutinizing the situation enough. And of course, you're an expert in that space. So tell us then, what would you have expected to happen? What would have been a normal situation then? Because you said you've never experienced a newspaper like literally just going after this one particular country or company or whatever. So what would a normal response, what would be the difference between how TechCrunch responded and what a normal response would have looked like?
Okay, so again, to set this in context, and I think Grace is on Twitter as well, but COVID data is being processed across the world right now. Mm-hmm. By organizations, by governments, by individuals.
Yeah.
So now when we're talking about even the apps that have been developed, there are several COVID apps, not just government issued apps. Mm-hmm. There are loads of apps. Right now, med tech and that kind of health tech industry is booming.
Booming because of COVID, right? Yeah.
You've got COVID passports and what they call them, COVID vaccine certificates, same as passports, but hey. But, we've got so much going on right now globally. And remember, what we were told is that there was a sweep and this was found on an AWS public server, right? So, I mean, you're talking about AWS. If you AWS or Microsoft, that's pretty much where data is hosted these days.
Mm-hmm.
You really mean to tell me that this was the only instance at that time? Yes, TechCrunch has come out with a story about India subsequently, but at that time, this was the only application that could be found that wasn't sufficiently secured?
Mm-hmm.
I'd be very, very shocked. Very, very shocked when we just think about the almost ubiquitous use of that data in the world today. We are talking about countries who have very little ability to even secure their borders, much less secure their servers.
Yeah.
So I find that very odd. In these circumstances, what we do usually see, and it, people respond differently, countries respond differently, depends on the culture with the press. But what we do usually see is that the journalist will reach out. We will send that response to the press team. Whether we want to respond or not is up to us. Oftentimes we won't respond.
Okay.
Just because we don't want to give it weight. It depends on what it is.
Yeah.
It depends on the company. But, or the country. But when we do respond, or even if we don't respond, yes, we expect the story to be published and we keep monitoring the story. But we wouldn't expect to see, maybe you see another report of it, but we wouldn't expect to see, as I said, three reports in 1 week. And then following on from that particular report, the journalists themselves literally going in on the country or the company on their Twitter. It's just unusual to see that. So that was my concern. As I said, if we are talking about highlighting flaws, making sure data and systems are secure, then the way that we usually do that is we try to help organizations. You are not helping me if you're still beating me while I'm trying to fix what I'm doing. That's the whole point, because now you've given me another incident to respond to publicly. Mm-hmm. I only have finite resources, and it's clear if I have, sorry to call it, but sloppy security measures in place in the first place, I'm probably not the best at this.
Yeah.
So why would you go after me so much in such a short space of time? At least give me a week. Because as I said, when you go into a data security incident and it's something of this magnitude for a country like that, we are talking about travel data in a country that is heavily reliant upon travel to maintain its GDP. That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
They're also putting on top of that COVID. COVID is an issue that is we're all very sensitive about it. We all have an opinion about it. And none of us are particularly comfortable about what's going on right now. Mm-hmm. So when we put all of those things together, it starts to look to me either as press fodder or someone has actually got it out for a country or a particular
company
or they're against COVID apps or what is it? What is the actual problem that you're trying to highlight here? And sometimes be honest about the problem rather than saying, look at this flaw, look how bad they are. Yeah. Because believe me, people would be surprised. I sometimes, when people report a security incident to me, and notice I don't use the term breach willingly. Mm-hmm. Everything is a security incident until it meets the legal definition of a breach, which is a very definite definition. And that depends on the piece of legislation too.
Right.
But when you report a security incident, sometimes I'm just amazed. I'm like, how did they get this wrong? I'm sure even I could have made it better than that. And I don't know what I'm doing. So yes, it's sloppy, but it's not unusual. And unfortunately, this is how we learn.
Right.
And in the travel industry in particular, because the travel industry is reliant upon so many different technologies working together and so many interdependent transfers of data. So many, the connectivity between the systems is absolutely crazy. Yeah. There are just so many data transfers that that's where we see a lot of sloppiness sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you may need to have this open in order for that plugin or API transfer or whatever to work. Yeah. So we do see that. And in
several integrations happening at the same time, which increases the likelihood that something is going to get missed or messed up somewhere.
I mean, look, Star Alliance, the loyalty card program for a number of airlines was compromised just the other day. I believe that was a hack, and I believe, I can't remember the exact source of it, but it was a huge hack. Huge. And oftentimes they haven't tried that hard to penetrate it, right? You know? So in this case, yes, I recognize that it was sloppy. I recognize that somebody with not that much knowledge may have been able to get hold of it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we see that sites that have still, in particular on websites where somebody's still been developing a site, sometimes they keep the dev option open. The dev site open, so we see some of the sloppiness in the back end through the dev site, which is just open on the web. Mm-hmm. If you take a lot of websites and you just put /dev in the URL after the name, you might come across the sites that they're actually working on, not even password protected in many cases.
So what you're saying is that this is in no way it's sloppy, but it's not unusual.
It's not unusual. Unfortunately, it is not unusual. And it is the reason why we have data breach laws and data privacy laws that relate to security in place. Because it's these sloppy intrusions that we're looking to, or not even intrusions, but sloppy security measures in place that we are looking to prevent and protect data from. Because when we actually look at it, we all recognize that if somebody's really targeting you, they will get in.
Yeah.
And the US defense has been targeted and
hacked,
right?
Yeah.
I've worked with the US military and government. We've seen...
The Pentagon has been hacked.
Exactly.
But nobody is safe. Nobody is safe because how online systems work, there's always a door to get in there somewhere. And you're talking about people who... Some of them wrote this damn system. Some of these people who are hacking into this wrote the system, and they are super adept at what they do. But I want to bring you back to something that you said. You were talking about breach and the definition of breach in the law. Because again, on the podcast, I wanted Trevor to explain the difference between a breach and a vulnerability, because TechCrunch actually did not say that there was a breach. What they identified was security flaws that could lead to a breach if nefarious actors would, and we don't know if there was a breach because apparently this unprotected system has been sitting out there for a while. So nobody really knows. So I want you now, from a legal standpoint, explain to us what laws should we be looking at, really? Because Trevor talked about GDPR, but there are other laws, as you would have pointed out to me on an off-air conversation. So I want you to go into the legal aspects of this thing now. And first of all, explain to us what a breach is, and then explain to us what other laws should the GOJ be concerned about, other than the GDPR?
Okay, so, well, let's talk about GDPR as well, because whether they should be concerned or not about the GDPR. But in terms of a breach, the legal definition differs depending on the piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. But in general, what we're talking about is a security incident that has led to the accidental or unlawful or unauthorized or inadvertent access, disclosure, deletion, or altering of personal information or personal data. Right. That's what we're talking about as a standard definition, because many countries are taking the definition from the GDPR now.
Right.
So that's what we're talking about. So has there been a breach by that definition? Well, there's no law in place at the moment in Jamaica, mm-hmm. right? So until the Act takes effect, the Jamaican Data Protection Act takes effect, there's no legislation in place to suggest a breach of that nature. Mm-hmm. In terms of, and I've heard people talk about GDPR potentially being, in terms of the government being subject to GDPR, I very much doubt that's even possible, mm-hmm. because the GDPR, General Data Protection Regulations, applies to businesses who are in the EU, established in the EU, or doing business in the EU. Mm-hmm. The extraterritorial effect applies to that those businesses who are located outside of the region, the European Union, but doing business in the union with European people's data. Okay. That means that you have to have, at the minimum, a website that is targeting those individuals, or you are monitoring those individuals, you're profiling them, for example, but you're actually trying to do business.
You're targeting EU citizens, right?
Right, rather than an incidental use of their data just because you have your systems in your country and then they come and use your systems. So the question as to whether the GDPR even applies has to be raised, because when we talk about that extraterritorial effect and making that website available, we're not talking in the main about a government website where you can, for example, apply for your visa online, or we're not talking usually about a website where you can, in this case now, you're uploading your travel information or your healthcare information prior to travel. And in any event, as I understood it, the JAM COVID doesn't actually require EU people to upload their data beforehand. It required people from the US and some other countries that were considered higher risk at the time. And then if we think about the app itself, so the app is a monitoring app because it's tracking people's whereabouts, but it's tracking whereabouts in the country.
In Jamaica, right.
Right. So again, it's issued to people whilst they're in the country, it's for use within the country. It's really difficult to say right now, and this is not legal advice, by the way, but it's very difficult for me to really identify that, to me, the Jamaican government falls within the remit of the
GDPR. In this context, in the context of the Jam COVID app. So you're saying that it may not necessarily apply to the Jamaican government in this instance because of how the app was being used, and that the app wasn't necessarily targeting any particular group of persons in any region. It's just that if you are coming to Jamaica, this is what you would have to do to comply with our immigration process. And therefore you're now subject to the laws that we have here and the processes that we have here. So it may be, so are you saying that it may be difficult for an EU citizen to then bring a case against the Jamaica government for possible breach of their data?
Of the GDPR?
Yeah, under the GDPR.
Yeah, I think it'd be, again, not legal advice, but I think...
No legal advice being given.
I think it'd be quite challenging.
For them to mount a case.
Yeah, I think it'd be quite challenging. Because if you're providing services, the whole point is that you would have a representative acting on your behalf who liaises with the data protection authority in the relevant EU countries, or you would have chosen an EU country. Right. So it's very difficult. Perhaps if the system had been operated through one of the embassies, for example, the Jamaican embassy in the UK,
right,
perhaps that would be slightly different. Right. I think it would be different, subject to diplomatic immunity and all that good stuff there. Okay. But in terms of GDPR have an effect, I strongly doubt it. And in any event, the GDPR recognizes that data breaches happen.
Right.
And the reason why the fines attributed to companies whose systems have been compromised are much lower. Okay. Under the GDPR, a data breach would attract a fine of up to 2% of the global annual revenue, as opposed to 4%, which is levied for breach of actual privacy rights, a failure to obtain consent.
So it's a tiered thing.
Absolutely. So it's 2% or 4%. And then for breaches, it's 2%. And in any event, that is for the most flagrant of breach.
Yeah, most egregious. Yeah.
And what we often look at is how did a company respond to the breach? And not just a company, a government institution. How did an organization respond to a breach? We're always looking to see that people have tested incident response procedures. Mm-hmm. They have documented procedures in place, then they are now testing these procedures so that when something happens, they are able to respond properly. Mm-hmm. So if you have some form of procedures in place as well, you've already got a half decent story to tell.
Right. So what would you say, because that's one of the reasons why certainly local tech experts and persons within that space locally kind of faulted the Jamaican government, because as we read with Grace Linda's response to you, is like, yeah, I kind of agree with you that something else is up. The government responds, not make it. Their response, not make it. And it is almost as if, again, they fumbled the ball in terms of not just their response, but with the handling of it. Because then the fact that TechCrunch could go back and identify two further flaws, and then there seems to be a miscoordination between Amber's response and the government's response, because Amber is over here wilding out like, say something. right? That was Amber's attitude the whole time. Like, and then the government attitude was like, okay, we're standing behind the app and, you know, we're checking. There is no breach, which is difficult for them to say. And as, you know, Trevor said, I wouldn't have advised them to say there's no breach, because there's no way you can know that there's a breach, right? So they said there's no breach.
I would have said that.
Well, you would have said that, but they said there's no breach. But then on the other hand said that they're investigating a breach. And it's like, so you can't say that if your investigation not finished yet. So it was that kind of thing that kind of clued us in as to the fact that something, there's a disconnect happening somewhere. And it may be because, again, they're not used to this magnitude of the thing. Because I hardly doubt that the Jamaican government has never had a breach or never had. But it being so in the public space, they may not have had to respond to this at this level, right? So they kind of fumbled that response. But you can understand why they responded the way they responded. They're the government. They have to take on a kind of almost confrontational stance, because it's as if, first of all, you're making us look bad. We look bad in the situation. And second of all, how did you get this information in the first place? And then Zach kind of responded by going, are you calling me a liar? So it was that kind of exchange that persons are going, you can't be loud and wrong, Jamaican government. You can't be loud and wrong, right? But you have a slightly different take on it, because when I was talking to you, like, if this was a British government, they would have gotten a cease and desist order so fast, right? So tell us about that aspect of it. But we're going to go back. Afterwards, we're going to go back to the law, because there's another law that you told me about that I thought was very interesting that nobody is talking about. But talk about how you think the British government would have responded to something like this, and if the Jamaican government response is in line with that, or if you are also of the opinion that they could have responded better.
Okay, so I'm glad you mentioned the other piece of law, because I did want to touch upon that.
Yeah.
How would the UK government have responded? When was the last time you saw something publicly stating that there had been a breach of the UK government systems?
I can't recall.
There's your answer. Because we all know it happens, right? We all know it happens.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest breaches that we encountered in the UK was actually something so sloppy. In 2009, a courier, a motorbike courier, because we use them a lot, we used to use them a lot before, was given a pen drive. And I believe, if I remember rightly, it wasn't encrypted, containing 26.2 or 26 million people's personal information, HMRC information, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs information, your tax information. You know that the tax authority knows everything about you.
Mm-hmm. They gave the courier this pen drive.
Yeah. And
the government gave this courier the pen drive.
That's right. And to this day, nobody knows what happened to it.
So the pen drive disappeared.
Just disappeared. It never got delivered. It disappeared. We never heard about it again. You know, it was a big story. But since then, I'm trying to remember a UK government story around a breach. You know, there'll be stories coming out because there's data sharing going on and they're not telling us, or they're not telling us how companies are benefiting from our data. But I cannot remember, I cannot think of one, and I cannot think of one that has been elevated to this level.
To this level, right.
So that alone should tell you, it's not that people don't find them, it's that you're encouraged not to report it. And there are many ways of encouraging journalists not to report things.
Okay. So do you think in that way, Jamaica being not the UK government was kind of a softer target?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I mean, again, we see maybe states being targeted in the US, but when was the last time you saw the actual something public saying that they had found a vulnerability in a federal system, for example? You know, it's sometimes a David and Goliath situation, and this was also my concern, because on this occasion, actually, TechCrunch has a wider footprint in the community, the tech community, and its news stories are picked up by the likes of Yahoo and Google.
Yeah, it's a very well-respected tech news source. Yeah.
And so it had a much bigger reach than the journalists within Jamaica. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that anyone at the Gleaner or the Observer could actually even counter it. I can't imagine that the government had a channel that would counter it either. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that's what should happen, mm-hmm. but what I'm saying is, in other countries, we're not seeing this percolating to these high levels that this story came up to. Mm-hmm. And that's what really concerned me.
Right.
It's around ethics and fairness.
Yeah.
It's very important that we are being fair, and we're fair to the individuals, and we are fair to those who have encountered the vulnerability. We have to remember that COVID is presenting some unique set of challenges, because everything is being done like yesterday.
Yeah. So it's rapid. Everything is moving real fast.
Yeah. Even the UK's very own track and trace system is flawed. It's not working. It's been very not as well developed as people would like it to have been. Let's put it that way.
Right, because with the Jam COVID app here, I think I was told that it took, within 48 hours, the app was ready to go.
Because exactly. They did something else. They took the architecture from another tracing app that was already in place, and they used it for this purpose.
Yeah.
And I understand from reports, nobody has told me officially if this is true, but I understand that it was provided to Jamaica either free or partially free. Mm-hmm. And for all clients, that is your weakest link. Because you know what what happens when we get freebie?
They're giving you for free. So maybe the normal testing phase and processes that they would have gone through isn't there, because it's free. We're not going to go into expend all that energy and money to give you something for free.
So now when it comes to when we're in the middle of a breach, the first thing we do is we look at liabilities.
Yeah.
We look at how can we make the supplier liable if it's the supplier, right?
Yeah.
Looking for liabilities. But if you have nothing in paper,
there's a problem, and I'm glad you talked about liability, because that in and of itself is not only questionable. It's like, okay, so you got this thing for free. So the Jamaican government, I heard, got it for free from Amber. Does that then change or colors who has liability now for the thing? Because there's a conversation between who's the data controller and who's the data processor, and who under the law actually would be on the line for something like this. And this is a great way to segue back to law. So who would be responsible for this? Because the Jamaica government would be the data controller. And I'm going now by the GDPR, because with the GDPR, most countries, as you said, have adopted their definitions, right? So in the Data Protection Act in Jamaica that does not come into play until 2022, it's the same language. So the data controller would be the government in this situation, and the data processor would be Amber in the situation. So who under the GDPR, if say in the remote some alternate universe where somebody could actually bring a case against the government, who would be on the line?
Okay, so the GDPR defines the data controller as the party that determines the means and the purposes of the processing.
Right.
Doesn't mean that you have to be the initial collector of that data.
Okay.
You have to be the party who has decided how and why data is to be used.
Okay.
So in this scenario, if you have instructed a third party to mm-hmm. act on your behalf in collecting data, and you've told them what you want them to collect, how it needs to be done, etc., you will be the data controller. So the likelihood, and I would say this with a very high degree of confidence, without seeing the, you know, the whole workings of their arrangements, the strongest likelihood is the governmental organization, the government entity, because it's not going to be the government.
The government, right? Yeah. Right?
So if it's the health department or security, whoever arranged for that, and it's not who arranged for it, but whoever that app and the website sits under, not just in practice but in organization terms, that is who would be the data controller.
Right.
And then the data processor, who is the party that acts upon the written instructions of the data controller, is going to be the provider of the software.
So Amber.
Amber, and then I understand, if I understand Amber Group's organization structure, you have Amber Group, and you also have a branch of Amber that produced the technology.
Right.
What we also don't know is, was this technology part of another back-end technology supplied by another third party or contractor who would also be another third party? For those people, we would call a sub-processor. But in terms of the chain of accountability, data controller, data processor, data, the sub-processor. And of course, the other party within it is the data subject, the individual.
Right. Which would be whosoever data was compromised.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So that's how that a chain of accountability would be set up. Mm-hmm. But there is another piece of law, which I think people are not paying attention to.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So that is New York, what they call New York Shield. And the US has this brilliant way of making law names of their laws that, I don't know, somehow they make the name, the anagram for the name really, or not anagram, the actual title is based upon the actual words within the name of the law. So to make it clear, let me explain. So New York Shield is called Stop Hacks and Improve Electronic Data Security Act. So the whole...
It's called what?
Stop Hacks and Improve Electronic Data Security Act.
So that's what Shield stands for. Okay.
A lot of their laws, right? So I don't know which one.
So clearly New York like acronyms, like, or Jamaica like acronyms, because we are good at acronyms ourselves. Okay. So that's what the Shield Act is. Okay.
And so what the Shield does is it requires New York businesses to put in place certain security measures, and any business that's holding data on New York citizens, New York residents, I think it is.
Is it extraterritorial?
It is extraterritorial in its reach. Whether it applies to countries outside of New York or it applies to the states outside of New York has not yet been tested.
Okay.
We understand that it could apply to countries. Mm-hmm. And so that's quite a serious piece of law, because it requires a data breach notification to individuals mm-hmm. if their data has been compromised. And if you fail to do that, the penalty is $20 per record or per instance of that notification not being sent out. And then also for breaches, the fine is up to 250,000 US.
Yeah, that's for,
So for the breach is $20 per record, and for a failure to notify, it's 250,000 US.
Right? Oh, so that's just for a failure to notify. Okay, because another situation, and it's I'm glad you said that, because another situation that is happening is that the government said that they notified, at the time they said over 700 persons, but then persons have been coming and go, well, we've yet to see somebody who have come forward to verify that they've actually gotten a notification from the government. So that is raising questions as to whether the notifications have actually gone out. So you're saying that if, say, for instance, a New Yorker was a part of this whole thing, they're a data subject in this whole thing, and they're saying, okay, I haven't gotten any notification. You're saying that the Jamaican government may be liable under the New York Shield Act for failure to notify to the tune of $250,000?
Yeah, and it's something definitely worth exploring. I'd be surprised if the lawyers in the government are not looking at this. People may not be saying it, but I would be very surprised, because as I mentioned, as part of responding to a data breach, firstly, a data breach response is a multidisciplinary exercise. Mm-hmm. And this is why you get lots of conflicting reports or conflicting statements when people don't understand their roles when they are responding to an incident, because you have the legal person issuing a communication. Mm-hmm. You might have the technical people issuing a communication. Then you may have the supplier issuing their own communication. Then you have the data protection people issuing their communication.
And it all conflicts because they're looking at different areas of... So everybody's looking at it from their own viewpoints, but there's no collective response as such. And you're saying that needs to happen. There needs to be that's what happens in the war room. You when you first started, you're talking about the war room. So that's kind of what happens in the war room, where all of you come together, assess the situation, and then put together a statement with the PR team. And that's the statement that goes out.
That's the statement that goes out, and that gets approved by the CEO or the minister or whoever's in charge. Whoever's head is on the block has to approve that statement. And it's usually a very high level statement that says, we are aware of an issue and we are continuing to work on it, and we take data privacy and security very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of what the Jamaican government said.
I
don't see where the only conflicting statement was the one where they're saying there's no breach and then they're going to investigate if there's a breach. So that was the only conflicting. I've not seen where they've been given conflicting statements. But to be quite honest with you, they've kind of stopped talking. Since that statement came out, I have not really seen another official statement being issued by them. I know we've seen like directives being issued, but no official media statement necessarily being issued. And I think you think that's a good thing that they have not been.
Not necessarily, because it gets to a point where I tell everyone a data breach is actually a PR exercise. Because what you need to do is you need to make sure that the individuals are aware of what's happened. They are able to protect themselves. Do they need to have credit monitoring in place? Do they need to have identity theft protection in place? What do they need to do? So you need to make them aware.
So, right. And this is part of building the confidence back up.
Absolutely. But you can erode confidence if you speak too early. If you don't know what is going on, don't say anything. Because we've seen this many a time with tech companies. We've actually seen CEOs lose their jobs because they spoke too early.
Yeah.
You know, and you say nothing's happened as far as you know. Then you get the forensics team in, you find out something did happen, then you find out more has happened.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, and on very good authority, having spoken with some of the top security and forensic firms about this, even companies like Mandiant, the average data breach, sorry, the average compromise, intrusion into your systems, so not like what we're talking about now where we identified a security flaw.
Right.
But the average actual breach has been lying in wait for something like 2 years and 4 months before it's identified.
Oh.
We've managed to reduce that time recently, but in general, you're looking at average is around 2 years and 4 months, but you know, you look
before
at
before you're able to identify a breach.
Absolutely.
So a breach happened 2.5 years ago and you don't know until
wow. You look at the reports into some of the biggest incidents, they didn't know about them for a long time.
Yeah, because a recent one was the some state at a State Department or something, they got hacked and it was going on for 9 months and they didn't know.
That's really common because oftentimes we only find them when we go through audit logs. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been involved in cases where the company starts operating in China. And when you operate in China, quite often you do also have to have involvement with the Chinese government, right? They have to have some ownership into the company if you're a foreign business.
Yeah.
And they very helpfully give you a piece of software that you need to put onto your systems. You put that onto your systems, bang, everything's just spilling out, right? Mm-hmm. But finding that kind of stuff is very hard. Or detecting an intrusion that's coming through some kind of malware because somebody somewhere clicked on a phishing email, yeah. And before you know it, this thing's been lying in wait on your systems. I think some of the biggest breaches I've dealt with, they declined to tell us exactly how long it had been going on, but it had been going on for a long time.
A while.
And I'm talking about hundreds of millions of records.
Yeah. So, Samantha, what happens now? So, before I go to what happens now, what liability do you think TechCrunch has in this situation? Because basically what you're saying is you're not sure why they are pursuing this thing. And to be fair to TechCrunch, TechCrunch ran three stories. Zach Whitaker has been on a mission, right? As I said, for a while, his Twitter feed was almost exclusively about this, you know, and responding to this and, you know, that big conversation on Twitter. So Zach, more than TechCrunch in a way, you're saying, you're questioning why pursue this so hard. You've never seen a tech company do this, much less to have their journalists go off on their own and literally like targeting now this country. You've never seen that. And you're saying that as far as you're concerned, this may have raised the threat level against Jamaica. In fact, you can confidently say that more than likely it has. And what we should expect is more breaches. And it's funny you say that because that has actually started to happen,
yeah.
Right? I think there was one agency page who, when you click on it, it was this, you know, the Chrome thing where, oh, you're a winner. Yeah, because and that was actually happening to my website. And I had to put extra security in there. So, and then you have Jamaicans who are looking at this and go, You see? Foolishness. Them doing foolishness. So a couple of things have happened since Zach and TechCrunch. There's an erosion. Well, the first thing that's happened is that it has brought awareness, and you're great with that. Yes, awareness needs to happen. But the slow erosion of confidence in the Jamaican system, you have a problem with. And so are you saying that TechCrunch has some role to play or has some responsibility or liability for that erosion in confidence, not just with the Jamaican public, but on an international stage. Because there's one thing I found curious when I was doing that, writing that article for the podcast, is I actually searched and I could not find another source who reported on it. I didn't. But then I found something where The Verge actually had their weekly update thing and they mentioned it, but when you click on it, it went back to the TechCrunch story. So it was a TechCrunch story that The Verge is saying, hey, TechCrunch has a story about it. But I've actually not seen this reported on like this in any other tech space. Of course, other papers would have picked up, but no other tech source have really picked up this story like that. So again, back to the, what liability do you think TechCrunch has in this whole mess?
So in terms of legal liabilities, a publication like TechCrunch would, they're lawyered up, right? Mm-hmm. They're checking what they're doing before they move, I'm quite sure. If they're not, I'd be very surprised.
Right.
But again, what is the motivation? I always understood TechCrunch to be operating from a place of raising awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And we raise awareness because we want to bring a subject to in the light so that people know what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or people, you know, we in the industry at least understand what has happened, you know, which systems are not working in a particular way or whatever it may be. Awareness is very important for consumers or individuals as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be careful around awareness when we, for individuals, because not everybody can process this information in the same way. We need to be able to understand the risk impact of some of this, some of the information we read about data breach. Because otherwise, people either become desensitized, as they have become in some of the more mature markets.
Mm-hmm.
Hear about a data breach, and oh god, yeah. Or people become alarmed, and within the GDPR, it actually says that we shouldn't notify individuals if it's going to cause unnecessary, almost alarm. The term is not alarm, because we need to make sure they're aware that if something has happened, then tell them it's happened. But if it hasn't really happened, then nothing's happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we don't want to do is erode confidence in digital applications.
Yeah.
As we are on the cusp of a move towards, I mean, we've accelerated our move towards digital so much.
Since COVID last year, yeah.
And so certain economies are really going to benefit from riding that wave a little bit, right? But if we make people become reticent to engage, then we've not really served some of our purpose.
Yeah.
So in terms of liability, actually, people like me, and I've spoken to other data privacy professionals here in the UK and in the US, some are also Jamaican. And we all like, why are they doing this? What is the point? What are they trying to achieve? And so TechCrunch has actually lost some credibility with me now.
Okay.
So now when I read TechCrunch, for the very first time, I'm reading it from a different lens. Like, what are you trying to achieve with this story? That's the first.
Is it because you're Jamaican, or is this an unbiased objective view?
No, I think I was biased without a doubt.
Yeah. Because, yeah.
No, in terms when I say biased, I mean that the story would not have come to my attention if I wasn't Jamaican.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read the Jamaican press every day, so I wouldn't have been aware of it, and I think I was biased in the sense that I understand the value of tourism to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the value of BPO to Jamaica.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand where Jamaica is trying to move towards, and not just Jamaica, the Caribbean region, because what people forget is outside of the Caribbean, oftentimes Jamaica is Caribbean for a lot of people.
Yeah. And Jamaica, believe it or not, is leading the whole digital / tech revolution, although I hate to say that, but Jamaica is actually at the forefront of a lot of it. And we sit here and we complain about how slow we are to adapt and integrate, but Jamaica is actually much further ahead than a lot of Anglo-Caribbean states.
Not just Caribbean, across the world.
Really?
Well, remember, I'm in Jamaica, four times a year, aside from COVID, right? I'm in Jamaica a lot. And I never notice a digital difference, aside from when I have to deal with certain institutions.
Right.
Even, I think the US isn't as digitally forward as the Caribbean at times.
Oh,
because wow. Our population, so it's easier to roll out new technologies.
Yeah.
You know, when you roll them out in bigger countries.
Oh, in that respect, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. So digitally, I think, you know, the Caribbean doing quite well. I'm really impressed. But yes, so in terms of reputation, it could have a real impact on the reputation. It could have a real impact on tourism,
mm-hmm.
because we're all very sketchy right now about where we go, how the data is going to be used. There's a lot of conversation about it.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned about business process outsourcing, if I'm abroad and my security team tells me that we might not want to use a supplier based down in Jamaica because they're known to have weak security posture. Come on, that impact can be quite great.
Yeah.
So
there's economic impact.
There's economic impact. So in terms of liability, I just think as a publication, like anyone in the press, there's often times where their ethical values and their perhaps economic motivations mm-hmm. collide.
Okay.
And I do question if this was one of those occasions where there was more clicks. Perhaps on this occasion, the journalist happened to receive more clicks than he was expecting for this story.
Mm-hmm. And no. He kind of, you know, push it, milking it for all it's worth, pretty much.
But, you know, Twitter is also a place where before you know it, I found it happened to myself. You responded to this, respond to that, you respond to the other. But again, what is the motivation? We all have to take a step back. Why did you put this story out or put this message out? We need to be well-intentioned about how we move forward.
Yeah.
And step out in intentionality. If your intention is around the ethics,
mm-hmm.
make a statement, make sure that everything is done ethically, and we should.
What do you say to Trevor Forrest said in the podcast that, you know, Jamaica should be a little more friendly towards the international tech community, especially because there's such a heavy reliance on the ethical hackers and the researchers who have actually been integral in helping companies identify vulnerabilities, identify breaches, fix the situation. Because as you said, they recognize the importance of it and it's about the integrity of the data. So how would you respond to that? And would you say that this is a situation where it was just an ethical hacker or researcher saying to Jamaica, hey, this is a situation and you know, fix it? Or do you think this is a different thing altogether?
That term ethical hacker is very broad.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not all ethical hackers have the same motivation.
Okay.
So when I talk about the hacktivists who, again, I identify the information and then before you know it, it's all over the internet and they just want to make you look stupid as a company or a government entity. or you have the ethical hackers who actually go around trying to find the vulnerabilities, and they will send you the report.
Yeah.
But it's too, you know, there's very different gradations of this. So find the right people to work with and continue to work with them. But you can't friend up with everybody, right? Everybody is not your friend. And so, and we saw this. So do they work closely? Well, that's more of a PR question, I would say.
Yeah.
And I want the PR people to understand to decide where they should be, you know, who they should be relating with in order to get their message across. But we always view journalists with an eye of suspicion as well.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Because it's about the news story for them, for the most part, and selling papers or, you know, getting more eyes on their publication. So they're not necessarily your friend. So I'm going to ask you to give the government of Jamaica some unsolicited advice, but not advice. So if you were a part of their legal team, how would you begin to try to contain this? Because we're far beyond, I mean, it happened and we're in the mess. So how do you now start to contain that, not necessarily from a PR perspective, because they fumbled that as well, but from a legal perspective now, how do you start containing the situation so you don't, because this seems like it's just going on and on and on and on.
Mm. So retrospectively, there needs to be, from the legal perspective, we need to make sure there is a contract in place with the supplier in this case.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that contract is really clear around liabilities for security flaws, that we have some kind of service level agreement in place to ensure that these incidents are dealt with within a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
And have a commitment around working with us on responding to data breaches.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sure that there is confidentiality language in place to prevent third parties or the suppliers from reaching out with their own statement when they are not the data controller. So that, in terms of the contract, that's what I would tell the legal team to really focus on. And also the more regulatory team needs to now be focusing on what is the data breach potential exposure outside of Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to understand whose data has been compromised, where are they based, what procedures are we going to put in place to comply with their law, and not just legally, how do we craft a very helpful data breach notification or even just security incident notification for these individuals. And then we should also be trying to look at, do some of these people require credit monitoring services or identity theft services? And to what extent would we be willing to pay for that? And building that into some kind of communication with those parties.
Yeah.
But moving forward, which is the most important thing, because tech isn't going away.
Tech development isn't
going away. And nowadays we don't really build in house. We do use small suppliers oftentimes, right? So what they need to be looking at is two things. One, vendor due diligence.
Yeah.
There has to be security and privacy added to the vendor due diligence if it's not already.
Yeah.
We need to really understand what insurances are in place. What insurance does the supplier have? Are they able to cover any potential claims? We need to really, again, make sure a contract is always in place, make sure certain mandated security measures, which are appropriate to the actual risk, are in place. I don't want to just hear, yeah, they're encrypted, or yeah, it's password protected. No, different levels of data require different types of protection.
Right.
And so we really need to start looking at systems properly in that way. And also making sure that any supplier has the ability to support on a breach. Do they have a nominated security individual or data privacy person? Well, who do they have there? And then on the other side of that, incident response procedures must be put in place. There needs to be a team set up with a number of people listed on a sheet, a simple sheet of paper that says, if you get a call from a journalist or this incident happens or anything, this person is responsible for PR. This person is responsible for technical in terms of IT. This person is responsible for the forensics. This person is responsible for privacy. All the named people have to be listed on there.
And their contact information.
Contact information so that we can contact them very quickly. And then we need to understand, what do we do when that happens? So they need to run a few scenarios in order to develop a set of procedures that works for different scenarios as well. Because sometimes we test one scenario and another scenario comes and nobody knows what to do because it wasn't the first scenario that we tested. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say the Jamaican government really needs to focus on. And also, there's no shame in this game, mm-hmm. right? Mistakes happen. Mm-hmm. They happen to bigger governments. They'll happen to smaller governments, and they will keep happening. Mm-hmm. But having the putting in place the systems and procedures to recover from this
and mitigate, yeah,
is what's important.
Yeah, yeah.
So every time we go through this, we learn. We document the lessons learned. We keep a list of what happened. We continue to track the mitigation actions have been put in place, and we make sure that they continue to be fixed. Because everyone's going to fix it at the beginning. 1 year down, you go and do your audit, same thing is a problem.
Yeah.
And speaking of audit, privacy and security must feature in the audit reports of any large organization.
Yeah.
Has to. Internal audit now need to bring in external people if they don't have the capabilities already, or do it themselves, have some kind of measures in place, audit systems, audit and actual compliance within these departments. So that's what I would say. There's quite a lot of work to do, but you know, there are a lot of lessons that many of us have learned within the Caribbean, outside of the Caribbean, that we can certainly support the government, you know, with developing these procedures. Right. So yeah, I would say there's a lot to do, but it's not insurmountable, and they are far from the only country that's suffering with
that's
this
suffering things right now. And I think that's a good place to end it, because as I said earlier, you're not saying that, you know, this story shouldn't have come out or whatever. You're saying you're questioning motives, and you're saying on the other hand too, the government could have handled the situation better as well. And you've given your reasons why. And I think it's also it's things that we can reflect on, because since we had that initial conversation, I've been reflecting on it. I was like, I may have been harsh in my response as well. And I think that was born out of my own frustration with the conversations that we've been having around tech and how the simplicity, the way that we talk about it is almost as if we don't understand. There are levels to this thing, right? And I want us to do it and get it right. And I think that is why I was so, you know, critical of the whole thing. But yeah, I kind of very much do understand what you're saying. And I am still at a point where I am glad that TechCrunch ran the stories. And more than anything, because of how Amber was behaving, I'm kind of glad that they were pointing out more flaws, because they're kind of too hype And I'm not sure why Mr. Savadia was the one responding. And then it was so antithetical to what the government was doing. It's like, no coordination. And so within me, as a citizen of Jamaica, understanding that sometimes government is not necessarily forthright with us. And conflicting information where they're saying they just realized there was a breach. And then Zaki say, well, I told you 2 days ago. Although Trevor explained that it may just be that the whosoever TechCrunch reported it to in the initial stage wasn't necessarily the right persons. So when it eventually got to the right persons, they were just realizing that they were the breach and you know, fixing it. And that is plausible. It's just that the government has not been very good in explaining themselves in that way. And then there's the issue with our journalists not being able to contextualize the situation and really giving the public weighted perspectives to kind of consider. So everybody's kind of left to their own imagination and devices. And of course, because tech is such a new thing to us, it seemed like this big, great monster of a thing. And, you know, it's like, no, it happens all the time. Believe me, it happens all the time. It's not a major thing. What made it major was the response and how everything has played out since. And not just the response of the government, but TechCrunch's response to the government. So thank you so much, Samantha, for raising the alarm, really, and being the first one to really say it with your chest. Right?
Yeah, I tell everyone, I'm not in this business to be popular, but I'm in this business to do right.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to add a little bit of context. When we say we have just received notice of something, 2 days in a data breach is just.
Yeah.
But we often still don't really know what's happened. Even though they tell you what's happened,
mm-hmm.
you still need to check it for yourself and understand, how did this happen? Did anybody record the screen? Did anybody actually access? You don't know. So again, I'm so glad this has happened because it's allowed for there to be a public discourse around this. And also people can now start to understand what this really involves. It's not like, oh yeah, I lost my keys and I know immediately and then I report it. There has to be an investigation, and that is not an easy thing to do. Yeah. And anyone that claims that they can complete an investigation in 24 or 48 hours, good luck.
Yeah, that may be difficult. And not only is it not an easy thing to do, it's an expensive thing to do, especially if you did not have, as you said earlier, a protocol in place as to how we deal with this thing, and then money set aside to actually deal with it. And subsequent, I think the government has said that they're going to put, I think, a quite substantial amount of money into shoring up certain systems and making sure that, you know, so that's a good thing. And there's a lot of positives, as you know, that will come out of this more than anything else. And I think that's where you're at as well.
Absolutely. Money always turns up after a breach, I tell everyone. Some mysterious amount.
Find the money after the breach.
Right. So it's all, to me, a breach is often a very good thing if we've been advocating for putting something in place and nobody's been doing it. Yeah. Then a breach happens. It's actually the lawyers and the tech team's best friend, although it's painful when we have to go through it.
Yeah. But
the natural a part of the trajectory. When we move from nascent or more novice or naive systems or regimes, privacy and security regimes, to the more mature regimes. We all have to go through it. It's a learning curve. It's painful. It's not nice. There will be more breaches. But hey, we'll get there in time.
All right. And that's a good note to end on. Thank you so much, Samantha. Really appreciate this conversation.
All right, well, that's what Samantha has to say about that. It is her professional opinion that the story has a heavy hint of bias in there somewhere, and that it seems less about protecting the data and securing the data and more about exposing and shaming the government and Amber. And as far as she's concerned, that's not what this thing is supposed to be about. That's not what ethical hackers do. All right, so what do you think? Do you still think it's a matter of accountability? Or do you think that maybe there's something else behind the scenes going on here? Drop us a line in our email at digitaljamaicapod@gmail.com, or you can leave your comments on any one of our social media pages: on Instagram, digital.jamaica, on Twitter, Digital Jamaican, and on Facebook, Digital Jamaica. We would really love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Digital Jamaica podcast. Remember, you can support the show by downloading the episode, subscribing to the channel, and leaving a review. We really appreciate it. The Digital Jamaica podcast is produced by Kadia Francis with music from Ketsa. Until next time, take care.